everybody, and welcome to the Saturday podcast. You know, we have different guests. Sometimes we go movies and politics, offshoots of sports, gambling. I bring in now somebody I watch play a lot of baseball because I'm from the Pacific Northwest. It's Harold Reynolds. Then I had the pleasure of working with him at ESPN. Now he's at the MLB Network. He was a multiple-time All-Star, a great fielding, three-time Gold Glove winner, a stolen base leader, Mariners, Angels, Orioles. But I remember him primarily, 83-92, a teammate with Ken Griffey Jr. And right now, Harold is featured in the upcoming Ken Griffey Jr. doc, Jr. It will be tomorrow on Father's Day on the Major League Baseball Network at 8 Eastern. I'll be totally glued to it. And Harold Reynolds is now joining me. First of all, I love working with you. Haven't talked to you in a while. How are you personally?
I'm doing good, man. You know, it's been a crazy time in the country, but some good coming out of it, and the family's doing well. So, yeah, outside of having to do homeschooling online, things have been pretty good. I'm done with that, brother. I'm done.
Listen, you're not the only person I know that I don't even know. It's just sort of emotionally that homeschooling thing. It's don't you think teachers are underpaid after going through it?
Well, it was funny. We had my eighth grader graduated last night from eighth grade, and they had all the teachers on and everything. And parents were talking, and I said, look, if you guys ever want to go on strike, you get anything you want. Anything. Every parent started laughing. They echoed the same sentiment. Yeah. Man, it was crazy.
So you played with the Mariners 83-92, and Ken Griffey Jr., I remember him. He was a number one pick in 87. I had a buddy who actually, I think they sent him up to like Everett or something. And a buddy of mine, was in Everett. Kevin Kentop.
Oh, wow.
Kevin Kentop played at UNLV. And Kevin could really hit. His dad was my first boss out of college. He was the owner and GM of the Las Vegas Stars. So Kevin told me, he's like, I'd never hung around the batting cage watching other guys hit. So give me your first impressions. The very first time you saw Junior play.
Well, the number one pick always comes and works out with the major league team, right? So Junior flies in, and we all know, you know, we've grown up watching the Big Red Machine. And so we knew about his dad, and I really had never met his dad. I just saw him from afar on TV. And he always had that sweet one-hand finish and didn't have a lot of power, but he had a nice swing. Junior comes in. He's 6'4". He's kind of skinny. He's about 175, 180 pounds. But I was like, I can't believe how tall this kid is. And there wasn't really a lot of tall baseball players at that time. So he's 6'4". He hops, and he's got this big old Michael Jackson afro. I mean, it's huge. And it was the funniest thing ever. I'll never forget that. So they find a helmet that fits him. He hops in the cage. And Colin, I'm telling you, he started rocketing balls in the upper deck. Second deck, not the third, second deck. He's 17 years old. He hadn't turned 18 yet. And I remember standing there with Alvin Davis, and we kind of looked at each other like, are you kidding me? And that was the first impressions I had of Junior. And after that, it was really history. I mean, he came the next year, the spring training, when he was 19. He turned 18, then he became 19. He played 1 year through the system. Then he came to spring training. And he was just an invite. They just wanted to give him a look and see how he progressed through the organization, how he'd do against big leaguers. And he tore up spring training. He hit 500. He was the best player on our team.
Wow.
And we couldn't help but take him. It's amazing.
So let's go back. You know, people forget this. How many great players the Mariners have had. So the first team that Ken Griffey makes in Seattle, give me the lineup.
We got Jim Pressly, who just became an All-Star third baseman.
Yep.
Bill Bradley's out in the outfield. Alvin Davis, Mike Moore, Mark Langston. Who else were some of the guys on the thing? Myself, Spike Owen, and Darnell Coles. I think we just traded Tartable.
I think your pitching was better than hitting at that point for the Mariners.
The pitching was amazing.
Yes.
I mean, we had Matt Young, Mark Langston, Mike Moore. Our rotation was serious.
Yes.
They all went on and went to different clubs and ended up being World Series players. But, yeah, we were loaded. We were loaded.
So then now Ken Griffey Jr. for you is a teammate. He's a young teammate. It almost reminds me of the late Kobe Bryant when he was with the Lakers. He couldn't go to the bar at the restaurant. He was, you know, the hotel he was staying at. So Ken, as a travel companion, he's a kid. I mean, seriously, he can't go to the bar at the Ritz-Carlton. Did he stay by himself a lot? Did he hang with the guys?
Well, it's funny. And this is why we kept calling him the kid, because he really was. At that time, video games were just becoming popular. Now, you know, everybody plays Madden. Everybody plays all these games. But he would get two small TVs, like 13, 14 inches. We have cell phones that big now, right?
Yeah.
But he would get these two TVs, and he would put them on the back, and they'd put them on the plane, and he'd sit in the back of the plane and play video games on the flights. And so when everybody else would go out after a game, he'd go to his room. I'll never forget being with Junior in Seattle when he started becoming real popular, and that was quick. I mean, he was 19.
Yes.
Then by the time he was 20, we would go to bowling alleys after our game. And there was one in Factoria just outside of Seattle that would stay open for us and let us bowl till like 1:30 in the morning. And so we'd play a game. That's how he got out of the house. And we'd go bowling and different things like that. So, yeah, he didn't get to hang out, but he created his own little things he used to do. But, yeah, he wasn't 21. He couldn't even go to the bar.
You know, it's interesting. So I grew up, I'm mid-50s, so I remember I can name the entire staff, the starting lineup for the Cincinnati Reds. I remember Ken Griffey Sr. He was straight line speed. He was the fastest Red. Joe Morgan was the quickest. But Ken Griffey Sr., he was the burner. He was like, looked like a little bit like he could play running back in the NFL. He was thick. Did he hang around the team in the early days? Or he was coaching in baseball, wasn't he? So did you ever sense that Ken Griffey Sr., having grown up with him as a dad, it helped Junior?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, Senior was still – obviously, you know, they played together in Seattle.
Right, right.
I mean, he was 40 and Junior was 20. So we'll go to that year. It's Ken's second season in the big leagues, and we make the trade and get his dad to come play in Seattle. And it was a huge story. But I don't think we see Ken Griffey Jr., the Hall of Famer, if he doesn't play with his dad.
Wow.
And here's why. When he came to the Mariners, and I talked about the first day I saw him, rocketing balls at 17 years old, when he finally made the big club, all the way through the minor league system, he was only a year, nobody could mess with his swing. That was the mantra. That was the mandate. Don't touch his swing. And whoever the hitting coach was, didn't matter. They would call his dad and they'd say, all right, Ken's doing this or that. All right, put him on the phone. He was his hitting coach, even though he was playing the big leagues from afar on another team.
Wow.
So now he comes to Seattle and Gene Kline is our hitting coach, and he and Senior had gone back way back, and they kind of placed Gene on the team with Ken because he knew he would be able to talk with him and help him raise him. And then we get his dad to come over. And I'm telling you, his dad taught him so much about hitting, adjustments during the game, different things like that. It was so cool to see. And pretty soon I'm like leaning on the cage going, can I work on that?
Yeah.
It was pretty impressive.
So you are now becoming, so at this point, he is the rising star and you have established yourself as an all-star level, gold glove level player. So you're an elite player in Major League Baseball and here is Junior. And was there a moment early in his career, his dad arrives, there were people saying, is he the most naturally gifted player ever? Do you have an epiphany, a moment, a play where as he's growing as a player, you're at second, you turn around and you watch him and you think, my God, I may be watching the best baseball player I've ever seen.
Colin, I saw it every night. Every night. I would sit there and marvel. I'm supposed to go out as a relay man on a cut ball and I'd just stop and watch him play. But there was a couple conversations. We're in Cleveland. We're on a road trip. And Junior and I are talking about a lot of different things and just kind of hanging out. He made some unbelievable plays. And we went to Boston. And this is that, oh, my gosh, moment you're talking about.
Yeah.
I turn around defensively, and he's still learning the league. I think this is his second year, a little bit somewhere in that neighborhood. And he's still learning the league, and he's playing Wade Boggs in right center. And I'm like, no, what are you doing? Everybody knows you play Wade Boggs in left center. Even though he's a left-handed hitter, we're in Fenway. He's going to shoot the ball off the monster. And I look up, and Junior's in right center field. Well, now I got to turn back for the pitch, and I want to wave him over to left center. Next thing I know, sure enough, Boggs hits a ball left center field, head towards a monster. He outruns the ball, outclimbs the wall. I mean, this wall's 30 feet high. I'm going a little – it's crazy. But he makes a leaping dive, flies into the wall, and makes this catch. You've seen the Spider-Man catch he makes in right center field in Seattle. You know, his hands and feet are up on the wall. Well, this one, he's like fully extended, but his back slams into the wall as if he's going up to snatch a home run over a fence. And he jumps up against the wall in Fenway and makes this catch. And I just couldn't believe it. It was a rocket by Boggs. He's way in the wrong position, and he ran the ball down. He could do everything, everything. Last one, I'll tell you another story. Edwin Nunez, remember him?
Oh, yeah.
So Edwin Nunez was a pitcher who threw like mid-90s, threw the ball hard. He and Junior were on a flight to New York, talking smack. And that's one thing Junior used to do. He talked more trash than anybody. Just always chirping, had fun talking it. It wasn't Michael Jordan, I'm in your face, you better perform smack. It was just fun natured talking trash all the time. So whether it's I can outdance you, I can do this, you know, you name it. So we're on this flight, and him and Edwin are getting into it. Who's got a better arm? And Junior's like, man, you put me on the mound, I can do what you're doing. I can throw 95. And Edwin's going back and forth, blah, 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 blah. We go to New York, Yankee Stadium. This is still going on for a whole day. Finally, we get to the park early one day, and they have a throwing contest. Who can throw the ball further? So Edwin is at home plate. He reaches back, and he throws the ball up there in the black seats where Reggie Jackson hit a home run.
Wow.
Bow, 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 from home plate. Junior reaches back and throws it over the seats in center field out of the stadium.
From home plate.
From home plate. If I didn't see it myself, I would never believe it.
Oh, my God. You know, LeBron's in this doc. Harold Reynolds joining us. The documentary is called Junior. You're listening to this on Saturday morning. This doc will be tomorrow, Father's Day, Major League Baseball Network at 8 Eastern. Harold played with him for a long time, obviously. LeBron's in the doc, and he talks about Griffey Jr. was the first baseball player, I think, got a shoe deal from Nike. And LeBron talks about how he actually made baseball cool. Did you sense that when you – did you notice when you went to baseball parks, not only fans, young African-American fans, did you notice that he was doing things in your community beyond just regular guys going to baseball games?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we're all trying to break in as star players, right?
Right.
I mean, we named that early on, guys. It was just starting to come around. But there was just something different. People gravitated to him everywhere we went. And we're in Seattle. This is not New York.
Right.
This isn't Chicago. And this isn't 2020 when you got Instagram, Snapchat, everything else. This is like one game a week, and we're never on it, you know? And everybody knew who Griffey was. His jersey was the number one selling jersey. He was in commercials, and he was cool with the commercials. And it was kind of when that time when Nike started doing the Spike Lee and Michael Jordan, is it the shoes, and they started changing the coolness of commercials. So Griffey has that for president, and he's running through the streets and all these different things. He had a candy bar, and everywhere we went, people gravitated to him. But he was different. You know, he wore his hat backwards. He had an earring. You know, baseball was stale. You better wear your socks a certain way and make sure that you don't have any jewelry on. And those were the rules even in 90s as we were coming through it, late 89, 90. And Junior bucked all those rules. He wore an earring and he had a hat backwards and he had a little limp to his walk, a little pimp in it. It was cool.
Yeah.
And everywhere we went, they gravitated to him. Everybody, not just black, but white, you name it, everybody.
It's interesting because people remember the series against the Yankees, and people say that saved baseball in Seattle, because Seattle, of course, had the Pilots, and they eventually went to Milwaukee in the 60s. And then, you know, the Kingdom was kind of antiquated, and the teams weren't necessarily great. And then there was this series where Seattle beat the Yankees. I think they went after that and lost to the Indians pretty quick. But that was the most memorable series. Then eventually, after 11 years in Seattle, Griffey goes to Cincinnati, and his dad, I think, is a coach there. And it's fine, but it doesn't – it's not – you know, it's always like your first love was Seattle. It never felt quite the same in Cincinnati to me, and maybe I'm a Pacific Northwest kid. Do you think Junior ever regretted the Cincinnati move?
I don't think so, because, you know, he went because his grandmother was ill. He wanted to be around her. And so I really think he thought it was a great move. I don't think he looks back at it as regret. He really missed 4 years with injuries, which was just terrible. But there's also something about that first team. People know you. People care about you. I talked to Derek Jeter about this a number of times because he could have left the Yankees a few different times as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day Derek and I were talking about free agents that come to New York. And he said, Harold, all people see are your great highlights. And that's what they expect. And you can't do that every day. And I grew up in New York. They saw me make errors. They saw me strike out. So it wasn't like I had to be perfect every night. But a free agent, they've seen your highlights, and you better deliver those every night.
Wow.
Tough to do.
And
I thought that was amazing insight.
Yes. God, I've never even heard that before. That is really – well, Derek's smart. I mean, that's a really fascinating way to look at it because, you know, the Mariners saw young Ken, and, you know, the injuries are fascinating because – I don't recall you having a lot of injuries. Certain players get them, certain don't. I could make the argument that Junior got him, Harold, because he played so hard. He banged into the wall a lot. Is that it? Or maybe his body, he played at such a young age with such a dynamic energy that it wore down over time.
Yeah, no, I think it's the first part. He played so hard all the time. And I think people forget, too. I know he's known as the natural and the kid and all that. But one of the things he used to play off so much, he'd get in there at 2 o'clock and take extra batting practice basically every day. And a lot of this goes back to what we talked about, him being 19 and can't really hang out with the guys. He'd get to the ballpark early, and he would hit early batting practice every day around 2 o'clock. He learned great work ethic from the Big Red Machine, and those great players always talked about you got to outwork everybody else. And that was ingrained in him. But that wasn't the public persona, and he didn't want that to be. He wanted to look like as many times he hit a home run, I go, what'd you hit? I don't even know, man. I don't even know. Yeah, you did. You know, he wanted it all to look that way, and he played with it, and the media ran with it. But he'd get in there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, work his tail off, hit, do all those things. And so we'd come to stretching at 5 o'clock after early BP and then regular batting practice at 5 o'clock, and he'd walk around calling with his bat over his shoulder, and everybody would be like, Junior, you got to stretch. He just, does a cheetah stretch when he's getting ready to go after his prey? He'd say stuff like that all the time. And he would act like, I don't have to do any of this. But he'd already done it 3 hours earlier, you know? So that was kind of him. So, yeah, he played his tail off. He worked his butt off. And so I think that was one of the reasons he had injuries early.
Yeah, Harold Reynolds, Major League Baseball Network. It's called Junior. It's the doc. I'll be glued. It's tomorrow on the MLB Network. One question about baseball now. I don't always side with players in any labor situation. In this instance, I've been all players because the rich guys in sports, the owners always talk about we take the risk, which is true to some degree with the financial stakes of a team. But in this virus year, there is a physical risk to players and their families. So I've kind of felt this is the year, just give the players the DH, prorate their salaries, give them the bennies. There's no physical risk to the billionaire up in the box. Your thoughts, overarching thoughts on if we'll get baseball and the public strife we have seen in labor negotiations so far.
Well, I went through three strikes and a lockout in my 12-year major league career. So obviously, I go into everything with a pro player perspective. But on this one, I'm faulting them both. You know, I just think I've always felt from the beginning, Colin, if you work out the health issues, then everything else should be taken care of. Because of the pandemic and the risk that is out there, if you can say, yeah, we're going to be testing every day, and here's the things with protocols in place, and you're comfortable with that, settle that part, then there's no reason not to be playing baseball. And that's not on the table anymore. I don't hear anybody talking about the health issues. So that's very frustrating for me when it's all about money and economics. And I've always believed this is a totally different scenario than what I went through when I went through strikes and got locked out 1 year because of the pandemic. We have 40-some million people at one time, you know, were filed for unemployment. And you look anywhere in the world, it's going on. So I think they should have came up with a very simple, this is for COVID-19. Let's work some things out. Let's get on the field. And let's not come off like we're fighting over money and issues that will be addressed in 2021 anyway when the basic agreement comes up. That's the frustration for me. I just think they missed the mark with that.
Yeah. It's great hearing from you again. You always make me think. The doc's going to be fantastic. Continued success. Are you in Connecticut or New York now? Where are you based?
Yeah, I'm in Jersey. Our studios are in New Jersey. I live in Montclair. Been here about 13 years now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice. So, you got trees and space and pool, I imagine.
I'll end up with this one. I came to Montclair, and Yogi Berra lives here, right? So I'd see Yogi all the time at his museum when he was alive. I'd go down to see him, and he'd watch the show. And I'd come in, and he'd go, "Do you know everything?" I'd go, "No, Yogi." "You think you know everything?" I said, "No, Yogi, I don't." "Then why are you acting like you know everything? Because if you knew everything, then you know everything. But if you don't know everything, don't act like you know everything." That was like every day he greeted me that way.
Yogi Berra. Harold, real pleasure. Continued success. You know, I've said this before on the air. Of all the league networks, I think the MLB network is by far and away the best. I think you guys have real opinion makers. I think the production values are great. I love when you bounce around games to game. It's hard to watch a full regular season game, but you guys do your whip around, your bang around on games. The guys there do great work, and it's great talking to you again.
Well, it's my pleasure, and you're on my TV all the time, man. I love it. You got such great insight, so I appreciate you. Keep doing your thing. I guess that's holding up the Northwest, right?
Yep. You and I, single-handedly. See you, man.
All right, buddy. Thank you.